Let's talk Ed here again. Hello, folks. Thank you for joining us. Phil and Marsha Thorsen are with us today, and we're continuing the conversation of this week where we're focusing on the mental health needs of higher education students. And now we're going into the segment where we're going to be talking, hopefully, about how we can improve the services and how we can support those individuals so we can keep our promise of higher education. Chris, did I do a good job? Do I get a thumbs up for the day, or are there corrections?
Yes, you did.
Gold star.
So, you know, one of the things that I've been thinking about as we've been talking about this, and this is going to be a long way of me asking a question. So now it's Chris who asks the long question. You know, I remember when I was in college, there was a protest on campus that happened during a Board of Trustees meeting, and it was about mental health services at the time. And the big chant at that time during this protest is 21 days is too long to wait. And where that came from is at that time, it was an average wait time of 21 days before you could see a counselor, mental health counselor, on campus, which they thought was too long. Now, when you look at the context, especially when you're talking about rural America, 21 days is almost lightning fast to be able to see someone. It seems like now that's measured more in months than days. So I guess to kind of start simply, is one of the things that we can do increasing mental health counseling services to our students, and is that enough?
Marsha, I'll let you start this one.
Okay. So are you asking, like, in the direction of ease of access, or do you want me to just talk about, like, my involvement with the college and what I do in the community?
Yeah, let's start there.
There's so many ways to start. So, like I said in the very beginning, I own a private practice. Because our community, our county does not have a community mental health center. Our college is a community college, so we don't have a counseling center on campus. What the college has done is they have a mental health specialist who is in charge of coordinating with other providers within the community and figuring out how to give access to the students. Our college also has an online mental health type service. But more often than not, I hear the students say that they don't like the online. They want face-to-face and in-person, which is so interesting for their ages, and they're online all the time. Like, it's so cool that they want the human connection. So ease of access, it's not easy. They're also in an age gap where who is going to provide the services. Now, that's my age of specialty is adolescents and young adults. So I think, and that was very intentional from the very beginning of my education, but it really does take, like, anytime you specialize in something, but especially mental health, it takes the right kind of person to be able to quickly build rapport and to work with that group of people so well and so uniquely for it to work either quickly or effectively, and especially effectively, because sometimes mental health's not fast. But I'm trying to remember, because I just talked about this with someone yesterday, about how many people we might have as providers in the area. And I think, I want to say it's a handful, honestly. If it's more than five, that's a stretch. So the 21 days is too long. I was thinking, oh yeah, it's going to be longer. And I've referred people for autism testing specifically because an ADHD diagnosing, those need a clinical psychologist, and that's not my degree. I can say, oh, this is probably what's going on, and I could diagnose it, but insurance companies won't recognize it, and so we need them to confirm. And those are even fewer and farther in between, and they are years-long waiting lists in our area. So it is sparse.
Well, and I was thinking, like, I don't know, 21 days is too long, but which is true depending on the situation, but in a rural setting, that might be, and also maybe the cost, depending on if the student is paying for it themselves or if that's an insurance agreement or something, like, it might be that someone is getting in once every 2 weeks or 3 weeks, depending on what works best for them. But at the same time, I think, like an earlier discussion we had with crisis, that's definitely a situation where maybe because, like, the way that discussion was, like, do faculty know what to do in a crisis of mental health? Like, okay, so we've seen the thing, like, there's actual, I'm noticing things, and then, like, how do you send that information up the pipeline, which I think is being communicated more than it used to, but if a lot of times, sometimes that messaging gets missed, or I'm still not sure, like, as a faculty member, I'm still not sure who I report, you know, like, sexual harassment issues to, different issues with that, you know, Title IX type things. Like, I think I got 5 or 6 years into my time before I was like, oh, that's what I do. And so I think sometimes, you know, hearing the message more often, what are we supposed to do? Not sort of a one and done, like, all right, so we have professional development for an hour over that. Now we're good.
We've checked that box. So we're good. We're covered. And we are not
intentional right. about those kind of things. Yeah.
Yeah.
So the you two talked about, and Chris's question is also dating the concern, right? Because we all went to school, you know, in my case, several decades ago. So yes, that's a concern, sparsity. But let's talk about it, right? So what your folks are doing are identifying what's happening with a student, and then helping the person who's going to help them. But if we have a question of really, we don't have enough people, what do you think higher education should do to boost the availability when for decades we've told people, why are you going to college to study psychology? You know, they're a dime a dozen, and so on and so forth. What do you think we could do?
That is actually why I teach where I teach, is to inspire people that age, any age. It's a means of access to inspire them and expose them to information. Here's how you go to college. Here's what degrees that you can get into. Here are all the different avenues for mental health, because there are so many. Here are some colleges I recommend. I didn't have that help knowing what avenue to take, so I want to help make that easy and cheaper and faster, perhaps. I spent entirely too long in college. Great experience, but, like, it took forever, and it shouldn't have to take forever. And then so that they can go and get their education and come back to these rural communities to help serve, because they are not a dime a dozen. They are, for some, I've heard that, and, like, I wonder why people think that, because there are so few mental health practitioners and really good ones at that, you know, who can do what we do, because it's not just a science. There's an art to it. The research is me search is something I think all the time. So there are reasons we get into this field. And the quick answer to how, like, what can colleges do without talking about money? They need to hire more. We need to hire actual practitioners who specialize in this age group, who know what they're doing. They are just awesome and qualified. And then, like, I think the colleges need to take on the liability, because I think that that's something that especially Illinois law isn't really clear on. Like, we're required to have access to mental health, but that is so ambiguous that that's why we have one person who coordinates access. So she's technically like a coordinator, even though she's a licensed practitioner. She doesn't provide mental health services. She's not allowed because of the liability. And I think, because I'm thinking about liability in my day job all the time, what a liability it is to not provide appropriate services if our students are to experience such mental health crises that they don't live through these 2 years. And that's the harsh reality of the mental health crisis in general. And I think if we're afraid of that conversation, then the fear is what's in control instead of doing something productive about it. And we're not protecting and providing good services for these students. So we really, I think we need to take more responsibility as, and I'm very low on the totem pole. So I have like no, at our college, I have absolutely no authority to make decisions. But I see a need and I provide a very specific service outside of college to be an authority on that opinion. So I just don't know how to solve the funding part.
Well, and well, yeah, always. But one other thought I was having was related to there's a very big misperception about what therapy is, what do therapists do. Like, I've mentioned, you know, because one of the first things I cover in Gen Psy class is different kinds of therapists, and sometimes I'll just state offhand how our county, our community is very underserved when it comes to mental health services. And nowadays, you know, people agree, but there was a time when I would be, oh, we're very underserved. And people would be like, well, what do you mean? We have three. And it's like, three's not a, do you know how many people need services in our county? Or like our college is a part of a four college system. And it's like, well, maybe we could hire one therapist for all four campuses. And it's like, that's
not a drop.
I mean, you have an 8-hour day and you're going to see eight people a day. So that's 40 people a week. That's not going to do anything. And so I think part of it is, oh yeah, that'll, a lot of times people just misunderstand what the need is or what the role is. And that kind of contributes to the issue as well. So we, you know, put a Band-Aid on things, or we think we understand what's going on, but it really, viewing it in a use, like seeing it for all the nuts and bolts that are required, I think is another piece of the puzzle as well.
Yeah. And that 8-hour day that you're talking about, realistically, because we have a lot of paperwork and we have a lot of phone calls and a lot of checking up. And what if you do have a crisis? We would probably be doing some sort of group activity. Group therapy is actually a really good way to meet a lot of needs for a lot more people than individual therapy. It's so effective. And you think one person on one campus, in a perfect world, 40 hours a week. Realistically, it's more likely like 30-ish. We would be providing like in services and trainings for faculty, and who's going to meet the needs of our faculty and staff? Like, I think we need someone to support that, because everyone is struggling. If the pandemic taught us anything, it's that we are all one event away from a crisis, and there's not enough of us therapists to go around to meet all the needs all the time.
Speaking of crisis, I can feel that Chris has something to say.
Well, you know, I was just going to say, you know, we talk about this so much in the context of students, but very often we forget about our own employees and our faculty and staff. And, you know, we've seen there, too, where we've had, you know, budget cuts and jobs not replaced and attrition, et cetera, et cetera. And doing more with less. And, you know, now our faculty and staff are dealing with different kinds of stressors as well. So, you know, making sure that as we talk about our students, and, you know, certainly I think everybody in higher ed always thinks students first, and they should. But at the same time, we all have to be okay too.
That's right.
Yeah,
absolutely.
It's not that different from a restaurant, right? Restaurants think about the customer, but if they don't care of the staff, who's going to take care of the customer?
Yes.
Same for stores and whatnot. When you stress any organization, the outcome is unlikely to be better than if you were to be a good steward. But this is a situation where for decades we have diverted energy, money, and effort away from something that humanity has had throughout its history, right? You know, schizophrenia, autism, ADHD, ADD, bipolar, depression are nothing that is invented today, right? It didn't pop up now, right? We never talked about it before, perhaps, or we called them loonies and we put them somewhere. But the reality is we've come a long ways to understanding that, no, there are cures, there are support, there are therapies. So, folks, wrap us up. If you were, each of you, you were to give us, if you had the magic wand for one decision to make, what would it be? And that includes you too, Chris. I want to hear your thoughts too. But let's go with the Thorsons first.
One decision.
Yeah, just one.
If you had one. What is one nugget that from you, Marsha, from you, Phil, and from you, Chris, that we can go home?
One thought I always come back to, because I know money is such a big thing, but I think endowments could be one way, because if you get one big donor that you can get some money generated annually, and then maybe that's the seed that you get one therapist and then, you know, generate some interest and get some things. But like getting a big donor with an endowment to open some sort of counseling center.
So is counseling, is money, basically counseling center and the money for it, that's the number one thing you would focus on?
Yeah. Just a feed.
Yeah, that was so close to what I was thinking. If I had unlimited funds.
He stole your thunder, so what's yours?
In a perfect world, it would be, because our college is so integrated with the community, I think having community money that can be funded into that, and then also the counseling center, and then the counseling center serve the community as well. So it's cyclical. And then our students go out. This is the dream that I have, like the students go out and get their education and come back and continue and come back home to serve. Or students that aren't from here that are like, gosh, I really enjoyed being in this community. This is where I want to raise a family. This is where I want to continue to contribute. I think that would be just absolutely lovely.
Chris?
So my magic wand is going to be grounded a little bit more into reality. I'm going to say, you know, in my perfect scenario, this is something that we all have much more real conversations about. And we do more than check the box. Mm-hmm. We do more than say, okay, well, we offered mental health first aid, so we're good now. Or, you know, we have you know, something online where students can go get something, that's good enough.
Yes.
But, you know, have that real conversation where, you know, what and how do we start moving toward the things that, that Phil and Marcia just talked about, and how do we make those an actual thing, a reality, so that we are serving all of our students and serving our communities.
Folks, you heard it here on Let's Talk Ed. I think everyone would agree with Phil and Marcia and Chris that money is an issue and has come in the way of our ability to do what's right by our students. But Marcia's point with regard to being part and members of our communities, because if we isolate ourselves, that's an issue. And Chris's point is well taken. For once, I'm going to agree with Chris. And you know, let's not turn it into an exercise in checking boxes. Let's turn it into part of our strategy, part of our raison d'être. Basically, when you do that, then it becomes part of your budgetary plans, and potentially you can make it happen. Folks, this week we focused on the mental health needs of our students, faculty, and staff as we seek to get back to the promise that of higher education in our communities, for our economy, for our nation, for the world. You can find us wherever you get your podcasts, hopefully every week if I get my act together and edit the shows three times a week. Again, anywhere you get your podcasts and on YouTube, like, share, send us, drop us a line. And folks, you're going to be seeing the Thorsons again, because this is an exceedingly important topic that gets swept under a rug. We, you know, in some ways it's a positive that came out of the pandemic, but goodness gracious, we still aren't doing a whole lot for it. We thank you for your time, Marcia. We thank you for your time, Phil, and we're going to see you very soon. Chris, thanks again, like always. For those three people who are going to help solve the world, this is Zahi Atella. This is Let's Talk Ed. We'll catch you next time.